For more information about Descriptive Video Service, call 1-800-333-1203 or visit the DVS website at www.wgbh.org/DVS. Write to us at DVS, WGBH Educational Foundation, 125 Western Avenue, Boston, Massachusetts, 02134, or call 617-492-2777, extension 3490. Major funding provided by the United States Department of Education.
A warning appears. This motion picture is protected under the copyright laws of the United States and other countries. This cassette is sold for home use only, and all other rights are expressly reserved by the copyright owner. Any copying or public performance is strictly prohibited and may subject the offender to civil liability and severe criminal penalties. Now, in a black and white film, titles appear over a stylized bat with glowing eyes. Carl Emley presents Dracula by Bram Stoker, from the play adapted by Hamilton Dean and John L. Balderston. A Todd Browning production, produced by Carl Emley Jr. Copyright 1931 by Universal Pictures Corporation. Carl Emley, President. Directed by Todd Browning. The players: Bela Lugosi as Count Dracula, Helen Chandler as Mina, David Manners as John Harker, Dwight Frye as Renfield, Edward Van Sloan as Van Helsing, Herbert Bunston as Dr. Seward, Frances Dade as Lucy, Joan Standing as Maid, and Charles Gerard as Martin. Now, on a mountain road, a horse-drawn coach winds between craggy peaks. Inside, a woman reads to four other passengers.
Among the rugged peaks that frown down upon the Borgo Pass are found crumbling castles of a bygone age.
She lurches forward.
I say, driver, a bit slower.
No, no. We must reach the inn before sundown.
And I pray?
It is Walpurgis night, the night of evil, Nosferatu. On this night, madame, the gods, they are barred, and to the Virgin we pray.
He and his wife cross themselves. Now, in a stuccoed kitchen, a woman wearing a headscarf kneels and prays. Behind her, a stout man shakes a bundle of herbs under a chimney. Outside, villagers dressed in full skirts and peasant blouses hurry out of a tavern and point toward the approaching coach. Beyond the village gates, a towering cross stands silhouetted on a hillside. Villagers watch as the coach pulls to a stop and the passengers climb out. A slight young man wearing a three-piece suit and a narrow-brimmed white hat points a cane.
Don't take my luggage down. I'm going on to Borgo Pass tonight.
Borgo Soros, Maeste?
The porter's eyes widen. The innkeeper gapes and shoots the young man a worried stare.
No, please, put that back up there.
The innkeeper joins him.
The driver, he is afraid. Walpurgis night. Good fellow he is. He wants me to ask if you can wait and go on after sunrise.
Well, I'm sorry, but there's a carriage meeting me at Borgo Pass at midnight.
Borgo Pass?
Yes.
Whose carriage?
Count Dracula's.
Count Dracula's? Yes.
Nearby, a woman wearing a black shawl crosses herself. The young man observes her, then faces the wide-eyed innkeeper.
Castle Dracula?
Yes, that's where I'm going.
To the castle?
Yes.
No. You mustn't go there. We people of the mountains believe at the castle there are vampires. Dracula and his wives, they take the form of wolves and bats. They leave their coffins at night and they feed on the blood of the living.
But that's all superstition.
A man gestures from the tavern's door.
I can't understand why.
Nukes are clear enough.
The innkeeper points to the horizon.
The sun.
It sits low in the sky.
When these gone, they leave their coffins. Come, we must go indoors.
He rushes off.
But wait.
The young gentleman starts after him.
I mean, just a minute. What I'm trying to say is that I'm not afraid. I've explained to the driver that it's a matter of business with me. I've got to go, really.
The others stare.
Well, good night.
Carrying a leather briefcase, he heads for the coach.
Wait, please.
The woman in the shawl follows him.
If you must go, there it is, for your mother's sake. It will protect you.
She kisses a silver crucifix, then hangs it around his neck. As the coach heads up the dusty hillside road, two men close the heavy wooden gates behind it. The villagers crane their necks as the coach rounds a bend in the sloping road and passes the tower and cross. Now, darkness hovers over a crooked mountain pass and broken battlements. High atop a craggy peak, a turreted castle looms. In a vast subterranean catacomb sectioned by wide stone arches, a long coffin rests on the dirt floor. The coffin's lid opens, and a hand reaches out of the darkness inside, its long, thin fingers stiffly searching. On a low recess, an opossum scurries away as a second coffin opens, and a woman's pale hand reaches out. Pushing open the satin-lined lid, the woman sits upright, her face gaunt and ashen. Dracula stands wrapped in a high-collared cape, his dark hair slicked back from his pale, round face. His staring eyes pierce the gloom. Three ghostly women approach from another chamber. Taking slow, deliberate steps, Dracula ascends a stone staircase. At a foggy crossroads, a dark figure with luminous, staring eyes holds the reins of a waiting coach. A pair of lanterns emerge from the fog as another coach pulls up.
Hello, hello.
The coachman tosses a bag onto the road, then speeds his horses onward, leaving the young gentleman behind. Atop the waiting coach, the dark figure glares over his shoulder, his round face framed by a tight black scarf. The young man collects his bag and walks over. The driver stares down with wide, luminous eyes.
The coach from Count Dracula?
The driver points a gloved finger toward the coach. With a worried frown, the young man hands up his bag, then his briefcase. Breaking away from the driver's unblinking stare, the traveler turns and walks to the open door. The team of black horses pulls the coach into the drifting gray fog. Later, they approach the crooked mountain pass, winding toward the broken battlements. Inside the coach, the young man gazes anxiously out the window. Gripping the window frame, he leans his head out.
Hi, driver!
His eyes widen. A bat with a 2-foot wingspan flies ahead of the team of horses. The young man shrinks back inside. Later, the coach pulls under a heavy stone archway and stops in front of the towering castle walls. The young man jumps out.
I say, driver, what do you mean by going at this?
The driver is gone. The traveler gawks. A massive wooden door with scrolled ironwork swings open behind him. Hunching his shoulders, the man peers at it, then cautiously ascends the front steps. Inside the shadowy castle, moonlight spills through giant paned windows, which cast shadows on the dusty debris-laden floor. Below the vaulted ceiling, 100-foot-tall Gothic arches dwarf the well-groomed traveler as he creeps slowly through the cavernous hall. Three bats hover outside the decaying tracery of a pointed window. Dracula appears at the top of a wide staircase, wearing a formal white shirt and waistcoat beneath his long black cape. Below, several armadillos scurry from beneath a chair. The traveler eyes them and backs away toward the staircase. Behind him, Dracula slowly descends to a lower landing, a candlestick in one hand. At his back, an enormous spider web spreads across the staircase. The young man turns and stops short. Dracula tilts his head, one cloaked arm folded across his chest.
I am Dracula.
The young man removes his hat.
Oh, it's really good to see you. I don't know what happened to the driver and my luggage and... Well, and with all this, I thought I was in the wrong place.
I bid you welcome.
With a tight-lipped smile, Dracula sweeps an open hand toward the stairs and turns to go. The young man's eyes widen in a mesmerized stare.
Listen to them. Children of the night. What music they make.
The visitor turns his head slowly. Eyes on the window, he starts back up the stairs. When he looks up, Dracula has passed through the enormous spider web, leaving it intact. The young gentleman stops, gazing up at his host. Above, Dracula turns on the stairs, watching the young man with an eager smile. The visitor examines the web before him, then raises his cane and tears through the sticky threads. As he steps through, a fat spider scurries into hiding.
The spider spinning his web for the unwary fly. The blood is the life, Mr. Renfield.
Yes.
With an uncertain smile, the young Renfield follows his host. Later, they enter a lofty bedchamber lit by flickering candelabra.
I'm sure you will find this part of my castle more inviting.
Well, rather. It's quite different from outside. Oh, and the fire, it's so cheerful.
I didn't know, but that you might be hungry.
Well, thank you, that's very kind of you. But I'm a bit worried about my luggage. You see, all your papers were in...
I took the liberty of having your luggage brought up. Allow me.
Oh, yes.
Renfield hands him his cane, hat, and overcoat.
Thanks.
Looking around the vast quarters, Renfield strolls toward a carved wooden table set with pewter dishes, grapes, and a bottle of wine. Across the room, a heavy door swings open, and Dracula slowly strides out. Renfield takes a seat in the table's only chair. His brow knits, and he scans the room's ornately sculptured stone walls and archways. He glances toward the window, then puts on a smile as Dracula returns with his briefcase.
I trust you have kept your coming here a secret.
I've followed your instructions implicitly.
Excellent, Mr. Renfield. Excellent. And now, if you're not too fatigued, I would like to discuss the lease on Carfax Abbey.
Oh, yes. Everything is in order, awaiting your signature.
Dracula looms over him with glowing eyes. Renfield's smile fades. He composes himself.
Well, here. Here's the lease.
He hands it to Dracula, who studies it closely.
Why,
I hope I've brought enough labels for your luggage.
I'm taking with me only three boxes.
Very well.
Dracula folds the lease. His gaze settles on Renfield, who meets it with a glassy-eyed stare.
I have chartered a ship to take us to England. We will be leaving tomorrow evening.
With a reptilian smile, he turns slowly away.
Everything will be ready.
Dracula stands beside a heavy wooden bed.
I hope you will find this comfortable.
Thanks. It looks very inviting. Ouch!
Renfield drops the lease. Dracula's hungry stare locks on Renfield's middle finger, where a glossy bead of blood trickles down. With a zealous grin, he stalks toward his distracted guest. As he approaches, Renfield's silver crucifix falls into view, and Dracula reels back, shielding his eyes.
Oh, it's nothing serious, just a small cut from that paperclip.
He tucks the crucifix into a pocket.
It's just a scratch.
Renfield sucks the blood from his fingertip. Dracula watches him with a piercing stare, then reaches for the wine bottle and a goblet.
This is very old wine. I hope you will like it.
With slow mechanical movements, Dracula fills the pewter goblet. Renfield glances at a second goblet.
Aren't you drinking?
I never drink. Why?
Renfield frowns, then raises his cup.
Well?
He takes a sip. The whites of Dracula's heavy-lidded eyes glow beneath his full dark brow, and his lips curve into a satisfied smile.
It's delicious.
And now I'll leave you.
Well, good night.
Renfield's smile fades as he watches his tuxedo-clad host walk to the door. Dracula turns, grinning.
Good night, Mr. Renfield.
He leaves. Frowning, Renfield lowers his thin body into the chair and glances around the cavernous suite. He blinks rapidly, then shakes his head and presses the back of his hand to his pale forehead. The door to the suite swings open. In the hall, the three ghostly women in flowing white gowns approach through a rising mist. Unaware, Renfield staggers across the room, wrenches open a glass door, and steps onto a foggy terrace. Behind him, the women watch, their heads bowed in a predatory stare. A bat as long as his arm flies at Renfield's face. He backs down a few steps, clutches his chest, then collapses onto the carpet. The three pale women glide toward his limp form, their long, filmy gowns trailing behind them. On the terrace, a thick fog gathers. Dracula steps into the open doorway. At a slow, commanding sweep of his hand, the women shrink away from the body and back across the room. A cloud of fog seeps into the room above the Cape Dracula as he turns his gaze on Renfield. His elbows draw back, his long fingers curled like claws. He slowly steps into the room and descends on his victim. Fade to black. Now a ship tosses on a violent sea. Words appear, aboard the Vesta, bound for England. On deck, sailors and rain gear struggle to remain standing as a frothing wave washes over them. Down in the cargo hold, Renfield removes a padlock from a wooden crate and lifts the heavy lid.
Master, the sun is gone!
A lock of his straight black hair falls across Renfield's ashen face as Dracula's thin fingers creep out from the dark crate. With a crazed grin, Renfield pushes open the lid and Dracula sits up.
You will keep your promise when we get to London, won't you, Master?
Renfield crouches before Dracula.
You will see that I get lives. Not human lives, but small ones. With blood in them. I'll be loyal to you, Master. I'll be loyal.
The whites of Dracula's eyes glow as he turns away, wrapped in his high-collared cape. On deck, sailors wrestle with the schooner's wheel as waves crash over them. Dracula watches from an open doorway, his heavy brow furrowed. Now, at port, sunlight outlines the rigid shadow of a sailor clinging to the ship's wheel.
Must be a Scandinavian ship, that's what it
looks
to me like.
Here now! Get back! Nobody goes aboard this here boat with your party.
Captain dead, tied to the wheel. Horrible tragedy,
In the cargo hold.
Master, we are here.
With a toothy smile, Renfield crouches beside the crate.
You can't hear what I'm saying, but we are here. We are safe.
He locks the crate. On deck.
They must have come through a terrible storm. What's that?
Sails lie in limp piles.
Why? Come from that hatchway.
A man opens the hatch. In a shaft of sunlight, Renfield stares up from the cargo hold, his teeth bared in a maniacal grin.
Why, he's mad. Look at his eyes. Why, the man's gone crazy.
Now, a newspaper reads, late London edition, crew of corpses found on derelict vessel. Schooner Vesta drifts into Whitby Harbor after storm, bearing gruesome cargo. In smaller print, sole survivor, a raving maniac. His craving to devour ants, flies, and other small living things to obtain their blood puzzles scientists. At present, he is under observation in Dr. Seward's sanitarium near London. Fade to black. A title appears, London. On a foggy street, a girl holds a basket.
Violet, slap your back nose, sir. Slap your back nose, sir.
Dracula steps up. He towers over her, wearing a black top hat and cape. The girl stands frozen, holding a flower as Dracula casts his luminous stare. Her eyes meet his in a hypnotized gaze. Dracula grips her shoulders and leans her back behind a thick stone column. Later, Dracula walks with slow, even steps along a busy London street. A six-pointed medal hangs on a wide ribbon under his white tuxedo tie. Around him, men in fedoras and women in long winter coats hurry by. A constable in a black domed helmet blows a whistle by the lifeless body of the girl. Several pedestrians rush over. Now, men in tuxedos and women in fur-collared coats gather beneath a glittering marquee. Nearby signs read, London Symphony Orchestra. Clutching his cape and a walking stick, Dracula enters the lobby. Inside, a female usher in a white apron and wide satin headband reads Dracula's ticket, then leads him down a side aisle. At the end of the aisle, four people sit in box seats, their faces turned toward the stage. The usher brushes aside a heavy drape, then follows Dracula toward the box seats. People in the box smile. Outside the box curtain, the usher stares at Dracula, transfixed.
And after you deliver the message, you will remember nothing, I now say.
His dark eyebrows set in a dominating stare.
Obey.
Dracula removes his cape. With a glazed expression, the usher parts the box curtains.
Dr. Seward.
An yes? Older gentleman.
You're wanted on the telephone.
Oh, thank you. Well, excuse me,
oh,
dear.
Oh, Father, if it's from home, will you say I'm spending the night in town with Lucy?
All right, dear.
Dracula steps up.
Pardon? Mm-hmm. Yes? I could not help overhearing your name. Might I inquire if you are the Dr. Seward whose sanitarium is at Whitby?
Why, yes.
I'm Count Dracula.
The others exchange a glance.
I have just leased Carfax, Abbey. I understand it adjoins your grounds.
Why, yes, it does. I'm very happy to make your acquaintance.
They shake hands.
May I present my daughter, Mina?
Count Dracula.
Miss Weston.
How do you do?
And Mr. Harker.
How do you do?
Count Dracula's just taken Carfax Abbey.
Mina.
Oh, it'll be a relief to see lights in those dismal old windows.
It will indeed. You'll excuse me, I'm wanted on the telephone.
He leaves.
The Abbey could be very attractive, but I should imagine it would need quite extensive repairs.
Dracula smiles at the young John Harker.
I shall do very little repairing.
He turns to Lucy Weston.
It reminds me of the broken battlements of my own castle, in Transylvania.
The Abbey always reminds me of that old toast. About lofty timbers. The walls around are bare, echoing to our laughter, as though the dead were there.
Oh, nice little sentiment.
But there's more, even nicer. Half a cup to the dead already. Hurrah for the next who dies.
Oh, never mind the rest, dear.
To die, to be really dead. That must be glorious.
Mina.
Why, Count Dracula.
He turns an intense gaze on her.
There are far worse things waiting man than death.
The house lights dim, and the young trio turns toward the stage. Dracula's piercing eyes fix on Lucy, his supple lips pulled up in a feline smile. Later, in a bedroom, Lucy sits at a gilded mirror. Mina, her short hair set in loose waves around her delicate face, strikes a pose.
It reminds me of the broken battlements of my own castle in Transylvania.
Lucy frowns.
Oh, Lucy, you're so romantic.
Laugh all you like. I think he's fascinating.
Oh, I suppose he's all right. But give me someone a little more normal.
Like John?
Yes, dear. Like John.
Lucy gazes off.
Castle. Dracula. Transylvania.
Mina's eyes widen dramatically.
Well, Countess. I'll leave you to your Count and his ruined abbey. Good night, Lucy.
Good night, dear.
On the street, Dracula passes a constable.
The fog seems to be closing down a bit, sir.
Dracula glides by. Up in her bedroom, Lucy opens a French window. Outside, Dracula stands motionless, watching her from the street as she removes her lacy robe, revealing a fitted sleeveless nightgown. Inside, Lucy slides into bed, pulls up the quilted satin cover, and takes a book off the nightstand. At the open window, a light fog rises beneath a huge bat, which hovers outside. Lucy's dark shadowed eyes slowly lift from her book. At the window, the bat flaps its long, stiff wings. In bed, Lucy stares from her pillow, her thin brows furrowed. Her eyelids slip shut. The bat enters the room. As Lucy sleeps, Dracula appears at the foot of her bed. One arm holds his black cape across his chest. Lamplight glows on his pale face as he moves toward the bed, his free hand held stiffly before him. His eyes locked on his prey, Dracula hunches his shoulders and descends toward the sleeping woman's neck. Now, in the center of a Stark operating theater, five people in white caps and robes surround a body. Dozens of others watch from the tiers of seats.
Another death. Dead. Dr. Seward, when did Miss Weston have the last transfusion?
About 4 hours ago.
An unnatural loss of blood, which we've been powerless to check.
A nurse wearing a white mask over her nose and mouth hands the doctor a magnifying glass. He studies Lucy's neck.
On the throat of each victim, the same two marks.
Fade to black. Daytime. A sign above a wrought iron gate reads, Seward Sanitarium. Outside a stately stone mansion, orderlies in white uniforms accompany patients around the grounds. The patients look up.
Oh, he probably wants his flies again.
Oh, Martin, please don't, Martin, oh, Martin.
Behind a barred window, Renfield cowers on the floor as an orderly bends over him.
Please, dear, give it to me now.
Pinching an insect in his fingers, the orderly stands and heads for the window.
Don't throw my spider away from me. Oh, Martin.
Oh. Aren't you a shine now? Aren't you? Spiders now, is it? Flies ain't good enough.
Flies? Flies? Poor puny things. Who wants to eat flies?
You do, ya loony.
Not when I can get nice fat spiders.
All right. Have it your own way.
Renfield beams. Now, wearing a lab coat, a man with cropped white hair and thick round glasses pours liquid from a beaker. Scowling, he removes his wire-rimmed glasses and gestures to a man seated beside him at a large desk. The younger man reads from a book.
Read, Dummkopf, where I have marked.
Deine, cum extractum desperculionis sanguini nixtum est?
Dr. Seward and two other men sit around the desk, listening intently. The man in the lab coat looks up.
Gentlemen, we are dealing with the undead.
Nosferatu.
Yes, Nosferatu. The undead. The vampire. The vampire attacks the throat. It leaves two little wounds. White with red centers.
Seward stares.
Dr. Seward, your patient Renfield, whose blood I have just analyzed, is obsessed with the idea that he must devour living things in order to sustain his own life.
But Professor Van Helsing, modern medical science does not admit of such a creature. The vampire's a pure myth, superstition.
And I may be able to bring you proof that the superstition of yesterday can become the scientific reality of today.
Later in Dr. Seward's office.
But, Professor, Renfield's cravings have always been for small living things. Nothing human,
as far as we know, Doctor. But you tell me that he escapes from his room. He's gone for hours. Where does he go?
The men look up as Martin the orderly leads Renfield into the comfortably furnished office.
Well, Mr. Renfield, you are looking much better than you did this morning when I arrived.
Thanks, I'm feeling much better.
Professor Van Helsing extends his hand.
I am here to help you. You understand that, do you not?
Renfield accepts his hand.
Why, of course. And I'm very grateful.
As Van Helsing studies the young man's hand, Renfield recoils.
Keep your filthy hands to yourself.
Now, Renfield.
Renfield turns to Seward.
Oh, Dr. Seward, send me away from this place. Send me far away.
Why,
Why are you so anxious to get away?
The patient glances from one man to the other.
My cries at night. They might disturb Miss Mina.
Eh?
With a grim, wide-eyed stare, Renfield slowly turns to Van Helsing.
They might give her bad dreams, Professor Van Helsing.
He inches closer.
Bad dreams.
Renfield shrinks back. Outside, the sun sets on the horizon. Now, in a shadowy Gothic chamber, the lid of a wooden crate lifts. The diamond panes of an arched window reveal darkness outside. Inside, Dracula stands beside the crate, wearing his white vest and long cape. Back in Seward's office.
That sounded like a wolf.
Yes, it did. But I hardly think there are wolves so near London.
He thinks they're wolves. Me, I've heard him howl at night before. He thinks they're talking to him. He howls and howls back at him. He's crazy.
Van Helsing pulls out a small book.
I might have known.
He gives Renfield a sly smile.
We know why the wolves talk, do we not, Mr. Renfield?
He reaches inside the book.
And we know how we can make them stop.
He pulls out a sprig of herbs.
You know too much to live, Van Helsing.
Now, Renfield.
Seward stands.
We will get no more out of him now for a while.
Take him away, Martin.
On your way, old fly-eater.
As Martin escorts him out, Renfield turns.
I'm warning you, Dr. Seward. If you don't send me away, you must answer for what will happen to Miss Mina.
All right, Martin.
Come along now, come along.
They leave.
What was that herb that excited him so?
Wolfbane. It is a plant that grows in Central Europe. The natives there use it to protect themselves against vampires.
Renfield reacted very violently to its scent.
Seward, I want you to have Renfield closely watched by day and night, especially by night.
Now, on a metal hospital bed, Renfield lifts his face from a pillow. He looks up. His eyes bulging, he sits up straight and stares toward the window. Outside on the moonlit lawn, Dracula stares up at him.
Master, you've come back.
Renfield stands at the open window.
No, Master, please. Please don't ask me to do that. Don't. Not her.
Dracula's luminous eyes widen.
Please. Please don't, Master. Don't, please.
He clutches the iron bars.
Please. Oh, don't.
Now, Mina lies asleep in bed. Outside her open window, the large bat flaps its wings. A moment later, Dracula stands in the room, his face shielded by his cape. He lowers his cloaked arm, and light from a table lamp illuminates his pale face as he fixes a hungry stare on the sleeping young woman. Reaching out his long fingers, he creeps toward her. As Mina rests, Dracula descends, his eyes shining, his lips parted in a fiendish grimace. Fade to black. Now Mina sits on a couch opposite John. She wears a long scarf around her neck.
I lay in bed for quite a while, reading. And just as I was commencing to get drowsy, I heard dogs howling.
Seward and Van Helsing approach.
And when the dream came, it seemed the whole room was filled with mist. It was so thick, I could just see the lamp by the bed. A tiny spark in the fog. And then I saw two red eyes staring at me. And a white, livid face came down out of the mist. It came closer and closer. felt its breath on my face. And then its lips.
John takes her hands.
Dear, it was only a dream.
And then in the morning, I felt so weak. It seemed as if all the life had been drained out of me.
Darling, we're going to forget all about these dreams. Think about something cheerful, aren't we?
Oh, allow me?
Oh, certainly, Professor.
Think for a moment. Is there anything that might have brought this dream on?
No.
Across the room.
Doctor, there's something troubling Mina. Something she won't tell us.
And the face in the dream. You say it seemed to come closer and closer?
She nods.
The lips touched you? Where?
She touches her throat.
Is there anything the matter with your throat?
Oh, no, but I...
Permit me.
No, please.
Yes. Yes.
Van Helsing gently unwraps the scarf. Mina closes her eyes as he examines her neck.
How long have you had those little marks?
John rushes to her.
Please.
Mina, why didn't you let us know?
Do not excite her. When, Miss Mina?
Mina glances up at the professor.
Since the morning after the dream.
John looks up at Van Helsing, then stands.
What could have caused them, Professor?
Count Dracula.
A maid introduces the Count, who bows and walks over to Seward. Van Helsing eyes him suspiciously.
It's good to see you back again, Doctor. I heard you have just arrived.
He turns to Mina, who sits forward, gazing expectantly up at him.
And you, Miss Mina, you're looking exceptionally...
Pardon me, Dr. Seward. But I think Miss Mina should go to her room at once.
Professor Van Helsing, I don't believe it's as important as you seem to think it is.
Excuse me, Count Dracula, Professor Van Helsing.
Dracula returns the professor's bow with a cunning smile.
Van Helsing, a most distinguished scientist whose name we know, even in the wild of Transylvania.
With a watchful stare, Van Helsing bows.
I had a frightful dream a few nights ago, and I don't seem to be able to get it out of my mind.
I hope you haven't taken my stories too seriously.
John frowns.
Stories?
Yes. In my humble effort to amuse your fiancée, Mr. Harker, I was telling her some rather grim tales of my far-off country.
I can imagine.
Why, John?
John opens a cigarette box, and the mirrored lid reflects Mina alone.
I can quite understand Mr. Harker's concern.
I'm afraid it's quite serious. My dear, I'm sure Count Dracula will excuse you. You must go to your room.
In the mirror, Van Helsing notices Dracula's missing reflection.
Oh, but really, Father, I'm feeling quite well.
You had better do as your father advises.
Van Helsing gapes as he looks up from the mirrored lid.
Very well.
She looks toward the professor.
Good night.
Van Helsing bows.
John?
Glancing at her father, she strolls to the door. Dracula follows her to the hall.
Miss Mina, may I call later and inquire how you are feeling?
Why, yes. Thank you.
In the mirror, Mina speaks to the empty air. She turns and ascends the stairs. Closing the box, Van Helsing looks up at Dracula.
I'm sorry, Doctor. My visit was so ill-timed.
Not at all. On the contrary, it may prove to be most enlightening. In fact, before you go, you can be of definite service.
Anything I can do, gladly.
As Dracula strolls over, Van Helsing picks up the closed cigarette box.
A moment ago, I stumbled upon a most amazing phenomenon. Something so incredible, I mistrust my own judgment. Look.
He opens the box. Jumping back, Dracula knocks it away, his eyes wide. He levels a menacing, narrow-eyed stare on Van Helsing, who rubs his lower lip, studying the Count. Composing himself, Dracula turns and smiles.
Dr. Seward, my humble apology. I dislike mirrors. Van Helsing will explain.
He glowers at the professor, then paces slowly toward a set of French doors leading out to a stone terrace. He stops and looks back with a narrow-eyed smile.
For one who has not lived even a single lifetime, you are a wise man, Van Helsing.
As he turns and walks out, John relaxes.
Phew. What on earth caused that? Did you see the look on his face? Like a wild animal.
Wild animal, like a madman.
John strides out to the terrace.
What's that? Running across the lawn. Looks like a huge dog.
Or a wolf?
Gaping, John comes inside.
A wolf? He was afraid we might follow.
Follow?
Sometimes they take the form of wolves, but generally of bats.
Oh, what are you talking about?
Dracula.
But what's Dracula got to do with wolves and bats?
Dracula is our vampire.
But surely, Professor...
A vampire casts no reflection in the glass. That is why Dracula smashed the mirror.
I don't mean to be rude, but that's the sort of thing I'd expect one of the patients here to say.
Yes. And that is what your English doctors would say. Your police. The strength of the vampire is that people will not believe in him.
Now, Mina steps onto a lamplit terrace. She crosses to a stone railing and gazes out onto the lawn. Dracula stands beside a small tree, watching her. Descending the terrace steps, Mina goes to him, her gauzy floor-length dress billowing around her ankles. As she places one hand on Dracula's shoulder, he enfolds her in his long black cape. Inside.
Professor, vampires only exist in ghost stories.
A vampire, Mr. Harker, is a thing that lives after its death by drinking the blood of the living. It must have blood or it dies. Its power lasts solely from sunset to sunrise. During the hours of the day, it must rest in the earth in which it was buried.
But then, if Dracula were a vampire, he'd have to return every night to Transylvania.
And that's impossible.
Then he must have brought his native soil with him. Boxes of it. Boxes of earth large enough for him to rest in.
Renfield? What are you doing there? Come here.
With a toothy grin, Renfield creeps into the room.
Did you hear what we were saying?
Yes, I heard something. Enough. Be guided by what he says.
He points to Van Helsing.
It's your only hope.
With bulging eyes and a tense jaw, Renfield turns his gaze on John, then paces over to him.
It's her only hope.
He turns to Seward.
I begged you to send me away, but you wouldn't. Now it's too late. It's happened again.
What's happened?
Renfield gapes at John. He shakes his head.
Take her away from here. Take her away before...
The large bat hovers at the open terrace doors.
No, no, Master. I wasn't going to say anything. I told him nothing. I'm loyal to you, Master.
Van Helsing.
What have you to do with Dracula?
Dracula?
Trembling, Renfield clutches his chest, his face frozen in a wide-eyed stare.
I never even heard the name before.
You will die in torment if you die with innocent blood on your soul.
Oh, no.
Renfield hangs his head.
God will not damn a lunatic soul. He knows that the powers of evil are too great for those of us with weak minds.
The maid.
Oh, Mr. Harker! Mr. Harker! Horrible! Oh, it's horrible! Dr. Seward! Miss Beta! Out there, dead!
She points to the lawn, and the men run out. The maid gapes at Renfield. She faints. On his hands and knees, Renfield stalks toward the unconscious woman, his hungry eyes fixed on her neck. As he nears her, his mouth stretches in a wide, fiendish grin. Out on the lawn, Seward and Van Helsing follow John, who carries Mina's limp body.
Thank heaven she's alive.
Thank heaven for that.
Alive, yes, but in greater danger, for she is already under his influence.
Oh, it's horrible, Van Helsing, horrible.
Behind them, Count Dracula emerges from the shadow of a thick, ivy-covered tree. Fade to black. Now, on a foggy night, a constable in a black helmet rides a bicycle up to an imposing gate and dismounts. On a wooded path, Lucy Weston walks in the pale moonlight, branches casting shadows on her long white dress. Now at the sanitarium, two nurses listen as Martin reads a newspaper.
Further attacks on small children committed after dark by the mysterious woman in white took place last night. Narratives of two small girls. Each child describing a beautiful lady in white who promised her chocolates, enticed her to a secluded spot, and there bit her slightly in the throat.
Daytime. Mina sits with John and Van Helsing on the terrace.
And then, Miss Mina?
Well, how could she know anything about the woman in white? It's bad enough for her to read it in the newspaper without...
Please, please, Mr. Hawk. And when was the next time you saw Miss Lucy after she was buried?
John throws down a newspaper and steps away. Folding her hands against her chest, Mina stares off.
I was downstairs, on the terrace. She came out of the shadows and stood looking at me. I started to speak to her.
She looks at Van Helsing, who listens intently.
And then I remembered she was dead. Well, the most horrible expression came over her face. She looked like a hungry animal. A wolf. And then she turned and ran back into the dark.
Then you know the woman in white is...
Mina looks down and bows her head.
Lucy.
Miss Mina, I promise you that after tonight, she will remain at rest, her soul released from this horror.
If you can save Lucy's soul after death, promise me you'll save mine.
Darling, you're not going to die. You're going to live.
No, John. You mustn't touch me. And you mustn't kiss me. Ever again.
What are you trying to say?
Mina touches John's arm, then turns to the professor.
You tell him. You make him understand. I can't.
Van Helsing slowly stands and walks away.
Professor.
Mina glances down, then turns to John and puts her hand on his shoulder. She looks into his eyes.
It's all over, John. Our love, our life together. Oh, no. No, no, don't look at me like that. I love you, John. You.
As she looks away, her eyes fix in a distant stare.
But this horror. He wills it.
Miss Mina, you must come indoors.
The couple looks up.
You must?
Her shoulders sagging, Mina trails her hand down John's lapel, then stands. Following her, John stops in the doorway.
You know what you're doing to her, Professor? You're driving her crazy.
Mr. Hawker, that is what you should be worrying about. The last rays of the day's sun will soon be gone, and another night will be upon us.
John strides across the room.
Dr. Seward, I'm taking Mina with me to London tonight, or I'll call in the police.
But John, what...
Mina, please get your bags packed.
Stuart, I must be master here or I can do nothing.
Quite.
Miss Mina, both this room and your bedroom have been prepared with wolfbane. You will be safe if Dracula returns.
She'll be safe all right because she's going with me. Mina, I'll be waiting for you in the library.
Oh, John.
He storms out.
Father, talk to him. Please don't let him go.
At a desk, Van Helsing clicks on a lamp.
Oh, Briggs.
A nurse wearing a folded white cap comes over.
Miss Mina is to wear this wreath of wolfbane when she goes to bed. Watch her closely, and see that she does not remove it in her sleep.
I understand, Professor.
And under no circumstances must these windows be open tonight.
Very well, sir.
Briggs takes the herbs and leaves. Outside, pale sunlight washes the sky between the dark horizon and low black clouds. At the Abbey, the lid on Dracula's wooden crate slowly opens. By a dusty stone archway, Dracula uncurls to stand upright. He clutches his cape to his chest. Back at the Sewards, Van Helsing and the doctor pace past John.
You will recollect that Dracula cast no reflection in the mirror.
Yes.
And that 3 boxes of earth were delivered to him at Carfax Abbey.
Quite.
And knowing that a vampire must rest by day in his native soil, I am convinced that this Dracula is no legend, but an undead creature whose life has been unnaturally prolonged.
Well, Dr. Seward, what about it? Is Mina going with me or not?
If you take her from under our protection, you will kill her.
Now, John, please, please, be patient.
Mr. Harker, please, come here.
John walks over.
Well, John, I know you love her, but don't forget she's my daughter, and I must do what I think is best.
John slumps onto a couch.
Mr. Harker, I have devoted my lifetime to the study of many strange things, little known facts which the world is perhaps better off for not knowing.
I know. But, Professor, all I want is to get Mina away from all of this.
That will do no good. Our only chance of saving Miss Mina's life is to find the hiding place of Dracula's living corpse and to drive a stake through its heart.
Isn't this a strange conversation for men who aren't crazy?
Renfield, you're compelling me to put you in a straitjacket.
You forget, Doctor, that madmen have great strength.
Dracula has great strength, eh, Renfield?
Words, words, words. Oh, Martin, didn't I warn you to keep a strict watch?
On the phone.
What? Again? Yes, sir. At once, sir. Yes, sir. Right away, sir.
He hangs up.
Here. The doctor's pet loony is loose again.
At the Sewards.
He came and stood below my window in the moonlight. And he promised me things. Not in words, but by doing them.
Doing them?
By making them happen.
Veins in Renfield's neck bulge as he stares off, his mouth agape.
A red mist spread over the lawn, coming on like a flame of fire. And then he parted it. And I could see that there were thousands of rats with their eyes blazing red, like his, only smaller.
Martin arrives.
And then he held up his hand, and they all stopped. And I thought he seemed to be saying, rats, 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 thousands.
Dracula watches from the misty terrace.
All red blood. All these will I give you. If you will obey me.
Van Helsing.
What did he want you to do?
That which has already been done.
Strike me down dead, Doctor. He's got me going. Now he's twisted and broken them iron bars as if they was cheese.
Dracula is in the house.
In the house?
John rushes out.
Doctor, this time he can do no harm. We are ready for him.
Martin, come with me. I'll show you where we can put Mr. Renfield where he won't escape again.
Maybe you're right, but I have me doubts. Come along, old fly-eater. Now, you mustn't get out of it this time. I'm awfully sorry to have to lock you.
Martin escorts Renfield out of the library.
Van Helsing.
The professor turns toward the terrace as Dracula comes inside.
Now that you have learned what you have learned, it would be well for you to return to your own country.
I prefer to remain and protect those whom you would destroy.
You are too late. My blood now flows through her veins.
Dracula paces closer.
She will live through the centuries to come, as I have lived.
Should you escape us, Dracula, we know how to save Miss Mina's soul, if not her life.
If she dies by day, but I shall see that she dies by night.
And I will have Carfax Abbey torn down stone by stone, excavated a mile around. I will find your earth box and drive that stake through your heart.
Come here.
The professor gives him a hard sideways stare, his lips drawn in a tight frown. Dracula extends one arm, his fingers stiff and claw-like. Van Helsing sways slightly, then steadies.
Come here.
The professor's face softens and his eyes widen. His eyes glazed over, Van Helsing gapes, then takes a few plodding steps toward the vampire. Dracula's piercing stare intensifies, and he draws his hand in closer. Van Helsing falters, then, swallowing hard, he staggers slowly backward.
Your will is strong, Van Helsing.
As Dracula steps toward him, the professor reaches into his breast pocket. Dracula stops.
More wolfbane.
More effective than wolfbane, Count. Indeed.
A crucifix. Dracula recoils and flees through the terrace doors. Now, John listens at Mina's bedroom door.
Open the windows, Briggs, and let him come air. The odor in the room from that horrible weed. It's stifling. I can't stand it. But the professor gave orders. Oh, never mind, Professor, now.
Now, please, go back to bed at once. I'm going to call your father.
The nurse comes out.
What is it, Briggs?
Oh, I don't know, Mr. Harker. I felt strangely dizzy. And when it cleared away, Miss Mina was up and dressed and out on the terrace, and I can't get her to go to bed.
Oh, well, let me see her. Tell her I'm here.
John?
On the terrace.
Oh, John, I'm so glad you're here. But what have they been doing to me, dear?
John rushes out to her.
Locking me in my room. Oh, and the horrible smell of that awful weed. It's been like a nightmare. What's been the matter?
His eyes widen.
Why are you looking at me like that?
Mina. You're so... like a changed girl. Oh, you look wonderful.
I feel wonderful. I've never felt better in my life.
Oh, I'm so glad to see you like this. I've been awfully worried about you.
Mr. Harker. You'd better bring Miss Mina inside.
That's all right, Briggs, now that I'm here.
Run along, Briggs. Don't worry.
With a dismissive wave, Mina strides over toward a couch on the terrace.
John, look, the fog's lifting. See how plain you can see the stars.
Yes. Millions of them.
As John gazes up at the sky, Mina's eyes widen and lock on his bare neck. She leans in.
Would you like me to get you a hand?
He looks at her, and she blinks.
Why? What's the matter?
Oh, nothing. Nothing at all.
From inside, Briggs frowns at the couple,
come,
then hurries away.
Let's sit down.
Mina pulls John onto the couch. Inside, Seward catches up to the professor.
See what? That which I feared from the beginning has happened.
What?
Dracula boasts that he has fused his blood with that of Miss Mina's. In life, she will now become the foul thing of the night that he is.
But Van Helsing...
No, no, come, Seward. Come, there's not a moment to be lost.
Outside.
Oh, but I love the fog. I love nights with fog.
Well, only yesterday you said you were afraid of the night.
But, darling, I could never have said anything so silly. I couldn't. I love the night. That's the only time I feel really alive.
There's that bat again.
Jumping to his feet, John swipes at the bat.
Yes?
Look out, he'll get in your hair.
Yes?
Mina sits, transfixed.
I have the big bat.
I will.
John brushes off his hands, then stares at Mina.
You will what?
Well, I didn't say anything.
Yes, you did. You said, I will.
Oh, no, I didn't. John, come, sit down.
In Mina's room.
There must be some way to save her.
There is only one.
John.
The men listen.
That funny little old professor. He has a crucifix. Now, I want you to get it away from you and hide it.
But why, dear?
Oh, he'll be wanting to protect me again, or from the night, or Count Dracula, or whatever it is.
Well, I don't know. He may be right, Mina.
Outside, Mina's unblinking gaze hardens.
Your eyes.
She stares, motionless.
They look at me so strangely.
Mina's long-lashed eyelids droop slightly as she leans closer to John.
Mina!
Nearby, Van Helsing clutches his crucifix.
Mina, you're...
No, Mina, no!
The professor rushes over.
Give me that!
John wrestles the crucifix from Van Helsing.
What are you trying to do? Frighten her to death?
No, I was trying to save her.
Save her? That's a fine way.
It's all right, darling.
Oh, John, darling, you must go away from me.
She spots the cross.
The cross? Put it away. After what's happened, I can't bear to look at it.
What's happened?
I can't tell you. I can't.
Oh, but you must tell me. I have a right to know.
Oh, John, you can believe everything he says. It's all the truth. Dracula, he...
Dracula? Oh, what's he done to you, dearie? Tell me.
He came to me. He opened a vein in his arm, and he made me drink.
On the lawn, Martin stands with the maid.
What is it? Who is it, Martin?
It's that big gray bat again, sir.
There's no use of wasting your bullets, Martin. They cannot harm that bat.
Martin and the maid exchange a mystified glance.
No, sir.
Martin turns to her.
He's crazy.
The orderly shakes his head.
They're all crazy. They're all crazy except you and me. Sometimes I have me doubts about you.
Yes.
She nods and Martin backs away, wide-eyed and clutching his rifle. Fade to black. Now, a marble mantel clock reads 4:30. In her lamplit room, Mina lies asleep in bed. As she brushes a sprig of wolfbane from her neck, Dracula watches from the terrace. Inside, Briggs walks with glazed eyes over to the terrace door. Brushing aside its gauzy curtain, she gazes unblinking out at Dracula, who stands motionless, surrounded by swirling fog. Through the glass, light from the table lamp silhouettes Briggs' figure inside as she reaches up and removes a string of wolfbane from the door, then walks away. In the adjoining room, Seward stands with another nurse, studying a clipboard. They look up. Taking a few steps toward the open doorway, Seward observes Briggs closing a dresser drawer. He goes back to the nurse. In Mina's room, Briggs walks over to the terrace doors and slowly opens them to Dracula. His penetrating stare watches her every move. As Briggs steps aside, the Count enters the room. Crossing to Mina's plush bed, he leans over her sleeping form. Now, Renfield scrambles down a steep overgrown path carrying a lantern. Nearby, the professor and John observe him.
That's Renfield. What's he doing at the Abbey?
Van Helsing takes John's arm.
Come, Mr. Harker.
He leads John through a tall wrought iron gate. Elsewhere, Mina walks along a path flanked by leafless trees, her forearms extended in front of her. Dracula follows two steps behind. Inside the abbey, a reinforced door swings open, and Mina steps through, her long satin gown trailing behind her. As Dracula follows, Mina stops at the head of a curving stone staircase. Renfield enters the great hall below. He grins up at them.
Master! Master, I'm here!
Mina starts down the stairs. Outside, John and the professor carefully make their way down the overgrown path.
Where else would he be going but to Dracula?
Inside, Renfield races up the staircase.
What is it, Master? What do you want me to do?
Look, here's an opening.
Outside, John peers into the abbey through a square iron grate.
Mina!
Dracula turns.
Mina!
On the staircase.
I didn't leave them here, Master. I didn't know. I swear!
Dracula starts toward Renfield.
No! No!
Wait!
Renfield stops and slowly turns around. Outside, John and the professor rush along the abbey's ivy-covered wall. On the stairs, Dracula creeps toward Renfield, who kneels.
I'm loyal to you, Master. I'm your slave. I didn't betray you.
Dracula descends closer.
Oh, no, don't! Don't kill me! Let me live, please! Punish me, torture me, but let me live! I can't die with all those lives on my conscience! All that blood on my head!
Dracula lifts him by the throat. Outside, John throws himself against the locked abbey door. Inside, Renfield's limp body tumbles down the stone stairs. As Van Helsing and John force open the door, they spot Dracula carrying Mina in his arms. They give chase, but Dracula escapes, slamming a door behind him.
Mina! Mina!
As Dracula hurries across a vaulted stone chamber, John and Van Helsing battle the locked door.
Oh, don't get to him. He must not be too late.
Stopping, Van Helsing notices a shaft of light.
We have him trapped! Oh, day is breaking!
They break through.
Oh, you're killing us!
Mina! Mina, where are you? Mina! Mina!
They search the chamber.
Mina, where are you?
The men take off in different directions.
Mina! 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 Parker! Parker!
Yes?
Come!
The professor hurries over to a pair of wooden crates.
Where? Where are you?
Here! Here, Harker! I have found them!
As John runs over, Van Helsing lifts the lid of one crate. Dracula lies inside, eyes closed, his hands clasped firmly across his middle. Slowly lowering the hinged lid, the professor looks solemnly up at John, who stares at a second crate. Stepping over to the low rectangular box, Van Helsing hooks his fingers under the lid's edge, then looks up at John as he lifts. He sets the lid down.
Get me a piece of stone, anything, to help me drive the stake through their hearts.
Nervously tugging his fingers, John glances around the vast decaying ruins, then walks off. John stops. Looking back, he cringes, then resumes his search. In a pile of rubble, he finds a flat iron bar. Beside Dracula's open crate, Van Helsing breaks apart the wooden lid, snapping off a thin sword-shaped piece. As he strides over to the second crate and opens it, John returns.
Is she? How does she?
Van Helsing shuts the lid.
She is not here.
Then she may be alive. Mina! Mina!
Tossing the iron bar, John Mina. Takes off. Van Helsing kneels beside Dracula's crate and positions the stake.
Mina!
John looks back. Mina stands in a corner. Her hypnotized stare breaks and she clutches her breast, her shoulders convulsing in pain. Her eyes widen in terror.
Mina!
John dashes forward, searching.
Mina!
Van Helsing watches.
Oh, John. John, darling.
Mina clings to John.
I heard you calling, but I couldn't say anything.
We thought he'd killed you, dear.
The daylight stopped him. Oh, if you could have seen the look on his face.
There's nothing more to fear, Miss Mina.
Dracula is dead forever. No, 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 you must go.
But aren't you coming with us?
Not yet. Presently. Come, John.
In the Abbey's great hall, dusty shafts of sunlight pour across the curved staircase as John and Mina ascend, arm in arm. Fade to black. Scrolled letters appear, the end. As a model Earth revolves in a shaft of light, more words appear. It's a universal picture. Fade to black. This film has been described by Descriptive Video Service, a division of the Media Access Group of WGBH, with funding from the U.S. Department of Education. Described by Alice Austin. Read by Miles Neff. For more about DVS, call toll-free 1-800-333-1203 or visit our website at dvs.wgbh.org. Remaining opening titles. Associate Producer, E.M. Asher. Play Script, Garrett Ford. Art Director, Charles D. Hall. Recording Supervisor, C. Roy Hunter. Cinematographer, Carl Friend. Film Editor, Milton Carruth. Supervising Film Editor, Maurice Pivar. Western Electric Sound System.